Welcome to the Trucking Market Update on the State of Freight podcast brought to you by FTR, where we share timely transportation intelligence with you on a weekly basis. The Trucking Market Update is hosted by FTR's Vice President of Trucking, Avery Weiss. As Avery presents the information in the podcast, you can follow along and review the graphs and indicators by downloading the PDF or PowerPoint of the presentation from our podcast landing page. A link to the PDF and PowerPoint is available now at www.ftrintel.com/podcast. From there, you can also find past episodes and downloads for the Trucking Market Update, as well as the weekly Rail Market Update with Todd Tronowski and much more. That link again is www.ftrintel.com/podcast.
Welcome to FTR's weekly Trucking Market Update. I'm Avery Weiss, Vice President of Trucking. This is episode 113 for the week of May 24th, 2021. Before we start, a reminder that you can download a PDF with graphics related to this discussion at www.ftrintel.com/podcast. You can also download a PowerPoint presentation that includes images of those same charts you can use in your own presentations. Okay, let's start by talking a little bit about what's going on in Washington, or I guess to some extent what isn't. Over the past week, we've seen some tentative moves toward an infrastructure bill. For example, the White House cut $500 billion out of its own plan, but the cost is still $1.7 trillion and well above what Senate Republicans are prepared to accept. Meanwhile, over the weekend, one Senate committee announced a bipartisan plan that addresses just the surface transportation portion of an infrastructure package. The plan announced by the Environment and Public Works Committee, which does have jurisdiction over highway funding, and that's about it as far as it applies to surface transportation, would allocate just over $300 billion for highways, roads, and bridges. That's 34% more than what was provided by the so-called FAST Act, which is legislation that's scheduled to expire at the end of September. In fact, it's the expiration of the FAST Act that really provides some element of urgency, but Congress could simply extend the FAST Act on a short-term basis. It's already done that once, and we've seen in the past highway bills be extended many, many times, sometimes only for a month or two at a time, just to allow for more negotiations and then the realization that they had to extend it again. Meanwhile, in the House of Representatives, Republicans on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee announced what they're calling the Starter Act 2.0. The 2.0, by the way, is a reference to the fact that the committee Republicans last year had introduced the Starter Act as an alternative to the Democrats' own Invest bill, which was H.R. 2, which ultimately passed the House and then died in the Senate at the end of the last Congress. The Starter Act 2.0 appears to be basically the same bill as the Starter Act and includes various provisions related to the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. The most significant of those are provisions that would allow drivers younger than 21 to operate interstate under certain conditions, and that would establish a national carrier selection standard for shippers and brokers. By the way, the younger driver legislation is basically the text of the so-called DRIVE Act, which has now been introduced, I think, for at least the third time since it was first introduced two Congresses ago. Now, we've yet to hear exactly when House Democrats will move on their version of an infrastructure bill. Peter DeFazio, who chairs the T&I committee, in April had indicated that it would be in May, but that isn't happening. It appears that the starting point will be basically H.R. 2, which I mentioned earlier. As passed by the House, H.R. 2 had a few controversial measures related to trucking, including raising minimum insurance premiums, or coverages, I should say, revising and making public data from the Compliance Safety Accountability Program, and requiring a rulemaking to establish screening criteria for obstructive sleep apnea among commercial vehicle drivers. Now remember, at least technically, the Senate is in Democratic control. So if these measures pass the House, there is certainly some chance that they could pass in the Senate. Although, again, that is a very razor-thin margin. So we'll just have to see. Okay, let's talk about data. And to change things up a bit, let's start with some quarterly figures. The Census Bureau last week reported that revenues for for-hire trucking were up 2.6% year-over-year in the first quarter on a not-seasonally adjusted basis. Quarter-over-quarter, not-seasonally adjusted revenues were down about 2%, but revenue is always lower in Q1 than in Q4 on a not-seasonally adjusted basis. However, the decrease in Q1 versus Q4 is the smallest Q1-Q4 comparison since 2011, likely reflecting the fact that we had two rounds of stimulus in a single quarter, and that kept the pressure on trucking volume and on trucking rates. The parcel and local delivery sector, which formally is called couriers and messengers, saw revenues decline 4.1% quarter over quarter, and that's the smallest Q4 to Q1 comparison or decline since 2013. Year over year, revenues were up 26.2%. That's the largest comparison on record. And in fact, given that Q2 of last year saw a big jump in parcel and local delivery revenues due to consumer purchasing preferences during the lockdown, and that we've, of course, continued to see those revenues be high, that 26.2% comparison year over year might never be surpassed, or at least let's hope we don't see another circumstance in the future like what we saw in March and April of last year. The Census Bureau will report seasonally adjusted revenues next month, which will make it easier to compare quarters with each other. That report also will provide more granular data for the trucking industry. Okay, let's talk about the spot market for the latest week, which was the week ended May 21st, or week 20 of the system, or the week 20 of the year, I should say. After 2 weeks of inflated volume that was due mostly to international road check, load postings fell to essentially the same level they were at before road check. Spot volume in the truckstop.com system dropped 10%. Load postings were down in all segments. Of course, load volume remains multiples of not only last year's still depressed levels, but also the five-year average for week 20 of the year. Truck postings rose 4.7%. Over the course of 2 weeks, truck capacity is basically back to where it was before international road check tanked truck postings. The market demand index, which is the ratio of loads to trucks in the truckstop.com system, eased to its lowest level since week 17. Dry van load postings fell more than 14%, which is the sharpest decline in 11 weeks. Although total spot volume basically fell back to pre-road check levels, dry van load postings in week 20 were about 13% higher than during the week before the event. Load postings were nearly three times the level in the same week last year, and about 2.5 times the volume over the five-year average. Refrigerated load postings fell about 10% for the second straight week. As with dry van, refrigerated volume was still higher after those declines than it was in the week before road check. In the case of refrigerated, volume was more than 6% higher in week 20 than it was in week 17. Refrigerated load postings were about 164% higher than the same week last year, and about 174% above the five-year average. Flatbed load postings fell 8.4% for the first drop in volume in 8 weeks, and the largest drop this year. In fact, since last year's contraction, we've seen only a few declines in volume that large or larger, and they were all during holiday weeks. Flatbed volume, however, was still about 334% higher than the same week last year, and about 227% above the five-year average. There's no obvious explanation for why flatbed volume fell so sharply, at least by the standards of that segment. It could be that supply chain disruptions in automotive also have resulted in reduced steel shipments. It could be that, spoiler alert for something I'm going to talk about in a few minutes, April's weakness in housing starts continued into May. Or, as I've discussed recently, the sharp increases in wages for specialized trucking might be bringing back capacity, which is leading to a softer spot market. At least that's the potential. Now, all of those are possible and could be part of the explanation. However, I think it's also possible that we could just be seeing an international road check effect, just one that's not the same as what we saw in dry van and refrigerated. Flatbed's gain during road check week was incremental, while dry van and refrigerated volume surged. Perhaps without road check, flatbed volume would have fallen during road check week and last week as well, and now flatbed is just simply returning to what would have been its natural level of volume absent road check. And in fact, in a normal year, we would have expected flatbed spot volume to be easing in April and May rather than strengthening as it had been. Of course, 2021 is not really a normal year. In any case, it's only 1 week. We'll revisit this next week to see if it is a blip or perhaps the beginning of a trend. After that, we'll have to wait a couple more weeks to see what's going on because the data from next week isn't going to tell us much. That week, week 22 of the year, includes Memorial Day, and volume is certain to be lower in all segments. Okay, let's wrap up the discussion of spot market by talking rates. Despite the easing of load volume, total rates increased to a record level, surpassing the record that had been set in week 18. The broker-posted rate per mile, excluding fuel surcharges, rose by nearly 3 cents. Total spot rates were about 71% higher than in the same 2020 week. Dry van rates barely moved, easing just 4 tenths of a cent, and were about 68% above the same week last year. Refrigerated rates were up about 2 cents and were about 49% higher than the same 2020 week. Flatbed rates increased 3 cents to a record level and were about 81% higher than the same week last year. Okay, let's talk briefly about the situation with fuel. The bad news is diesel prices were higher for the fourth straight week. The good news is they were up by just 4 tenths of a cent per gallon. The national average price of diesel for the week ended May 24th was $3.253 a gallon, which is the highest price since late November of 2018. The average price is more than 86 cents higher than it was a year ago. By the way, despite all the attention given to the issue, it seems that the consequences of the ransomware attack on the Colonial Pipeline have basically played out at this point. The attack did not ultimately have all that much impact on the supply of distillate. Stocks of ultra-low sulfur distillate did decline further in the latest week to the lowest level since mid-April 2020, but that puts inventories at what had been in the normal range prior to the pandemic. Stocks during the week ended May 14th. In fact, we're still slightly above the average for all of 2019. Nor should we see too much upward pressure from crude prices. In the latest trading, in fact, West Texas Intermediate crude closed in the low $60 per barrel range. And that's reassuring because on May 17th, crude had closed at $66.27, which is the highest price since April of 2019. However, we certainly have seen crude prices drift higher this year. At the beginning of the year, crude was still trading at under $50 a barrel. And in fact, it was under $40 a barrel as late as November of last year. Okay, let's wrap up our weekly data by addressing unemployment. Seasonally adjusted first-time claims for unemployment benefits in the regular state programs fell by 34,000 to 444,000, which is the lowest since the beginning of the pandemic. We're getting closer and closer to our normal range. We're still, however, on the order of 180,000 to 200,000 above that, but we are certainly making a lot more progress towards that than we had seen as late as early this year. Continued claims in state programs rose by 111,000, seasonally adjusted, to 3.75 million. However, unadjusted continued claims fell by 10,000. So that's a bit of a muddled picture there. The federal unemployment program saw a sharp drop in continued claims. Those fell by nearly 830,000 in the two federal programs to about 11.7 million. So we're looking at basically 15.5-ish million people still drawing unemployment benefits. Now, as discussed last week, many states have decided to opt out of the federal programs, arguing that generous benefits are discouraging workers from taking available jobs. Since last week's podcast, 10 more states have joined this movement for a total of 22. However, benefits in those states will end only a couple of months earlier than benefits are slated to end nationwide, so at most, the effect will be to accelerate slightly whatever dynamic that would have occurred anyway. That, of course, is barring an extension of those unemployment benefits, which seems extraordinarily unlikely at this point. Okay, we have only a couple of monthly indicators to discuss this week, and they both relate to housing. Let's start with residential construction, which I already spoiled to some degree earlier in the podcast. Housing starts fell sharply in April, but volatility in residential construction is not unusual because the sector tends to be more sensitive to some external factors, most notably weather, than most other economic indicators are. Starts dropped 9.5% on a seasonally adjusted basis. That followed a 19.8% jump in April, however, and that was, of course, after an 11% drop in February. So these swings do appear to be disrupting the seasonal adjustments. April's unadjusted starts were just 0.4% below the March level, which in turn had been the strongest since September of 2006. So in other words, yes, you know, a drop of basically 10% does raise a red flag, but a lot of it may just have to be maybe ultimately related to what happened in February with weather, how that affected the numbers in March, and in turn, how that affected the comparisons in April. So that's why we look at this data over time and we don't just worry about a single snapshot. Compared to the pre-pandemic month of February of last year, housing starts in April were down 1.3%, seasonally adjusted. Starts are up more than 67% year over year in April, but that's not a particularly meaningful comparison given that basically nothing in April was strong, with the exception of what was happening, I guess, with local delivery and with parcel. Aside from disrupted seasonality, another factor in weaker housing starts could be the ongoing surge in lumber prices. As we talked briefly in last week's podcast, lumber prices have been surging almost interrupted since June of last year. Okay, let's look at some more forward-looking data. Permits authorized for future home building actually did tick up 0.3% in April. Compared to February of last year, permits are up more than 19%. Okay, let's talk home sales. Sales of existing homes declined 2.7% seasonally adjusted in April for the third straight monthly decrease. Sales of existing single-family homes, which is a subset of that, were down nearly 3.2% and have fallen for four straight months although the January decline was quite small. Compared to February 2020, sales of existing single-family homes in April were up, but only by 0.4%. The National Association of Realtors attributed the ongoing easing in home sales to a decline in inventory of homes for sale, not to a weakening of buying demand. Another headwind is that is frankly the market's own strength as prices keep rising. The median existing home price in April was a record at $341,600. In addition to high prices for existing homes owing to demand, Freddie Mac last week noted that the shortage of homes for sales is compounded by higher costs for new homes due to both labor disruptions and, as we've discussed, expensive building materials. By the way, the Census Bureau this week will release data on sales of new homes for April. Okay, so that's it for the week. Let's recap. Trucking and parcel and local delivery revenues were strong in Q1. Spot volume fell, but rates edged higher to a record level. Diesel prices rose by only 0.4%, or I should say of a cent. Unemployment improved in the latest week. 22 states now plan to exit the federal benefits for unemployment early. Housing starts fell, but remained very strong. And sales of existing homes fell for the third straight month. Join us next week for a discussion of orders for durable manufactured goods, sales of new homes, U.S. international trade in goods, and personal income and expenses, as well as anything else of interest that might pop up by then. So that's it for FTR's Trucking Market Update, episode 113 for the week of May 24th, 2021. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and we hope you will join us next week.
That's it for this week's Trucking Market Update on the State of Freight podcast. You can find more publicly available State of Freight content and download the PDF and PowerPoint of today's presentation by going to www.ftrintel.com/podcast. FTR is the leader in freight transportation forecasting in North America, providing consistently reliable reports for trucking, rail, and intermodal transportation, as well as providing demand analysis for commercial vehicle and rail car. For more information about the work of FTR, visit www.ftrintel.com or call us at 888-988-1699 to find out which publications will best support your business.